episode 180 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest on anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. We hope it's useful to and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site with commentary, anarchistnews.org.
Editorial. Heroism and cowardice. Heroes go above and beyond the call of duty, acting boldly in the face of fear, defying it. Cowards fail to do what they're expected, giving in to fear, shying away from action. Is your anarchism duty-free or duty-bound? What are the countless duties imposed by society? Waging war, working, and providing care, all activities that ensure its reproduction and maintenance. Is your anarchism warlike, or is it like a work in progress? Is it caring or careless, careful or carefree? Who does society venerate as heroes? Those who excel in the line of duty, like soldiers, cops, firefighters, medical professionals, and those who come to the rescue, rising to the occasion due to circumstance rather than trait. Who does society vilify as cowards? Those who refuse to attack as ordered, like draft dodgers and deserters, as well as those who sneakily attack it, like masked protesters throwing rocks, or terrorists with their dastardly plots. It can also deem suicides as cowards. Suicide bombers doubly so. What is it to be heroic or cowardly in anarchy? Can there even be such a thing as anarchic duties? Maybe heroism and cowardice are merely the carrot and the stick of duty enticing you or taunting you, coercing you, into doing as you're told, or as you're expected to act. Self-sacrifice for fear of being called a coward is conformism. Regardless, fear and courage are intrinsic to each of us. Braving fear seems to be the main hurdle in carrying out so-called easily reproducible acts. How can anarchists encourage or support each other to become braver? Or, if one who acts isn't brave, but simply clear and determined, how does one attain clarity, make decisions, and commit to commit?
I stand up for what I believe is right. I'm not afraid what others might think. I'm so happy being who I am.
What's new this week? Ungovernable, an interview with Lorenzo Comboa Irvin from Black Rose Federation. William C. Anderson, who co-wrote As Black as Resistance, which was the hot newness for anti-racist anarchists for a minute, here explains the increasing appeal of anarchism, complains about the bomb-throwing stereotype, introduces LKE, and then talks to him about the uprisings, revolutionary effectiveness, reform, changing times, and creating, quote, a new kind of political system of our own, whether it's dual power, revolutionary direct democracy, whatever we want to call it, unquote, and reaching the masses. LKE talks about his group, Black Autonomy, designed to combat racism within the anarchist movement, and claims that anarchists weren't anti-racist until he came along. There seems to be some contradiction in here, maybe just between Anderson and Irvin, about what being enemies of the state actually means, with Anderson at least emphasizing the cuddly mutual aid, while Irvin seems to desire more strenuous actions. Includes the requisite hyperbole about the significance of protests, but we knew that already.
Thoughts on wildness and domestication from Anon, a blog post, Prison is Bad, Wildness is Good, The Irish Knew a Thing or Two, How Political is the Personal and Vice Versa?
Disobedient, no. a book fair of radical imagination from neposluznibno.noblogs.org in the Czech Republic on October 24th. An in-body experience. Nice to hear those are still happening somewhere. Quote, the festival will take place in the premises of the former Kazitsny, which now serves as background for many activist groups. It clearly presents how colorful the use of empty houses can be when they are made available to residents. Kaznitsy is located in Chajul, a district that is undergoing intense gentrification and from which the original inhabitants are gradually being pushed out to other parts of the city. This is why we consider it symbolically important to organize the festival at this very place. Unquote. There's a link to the site for the program, but no program yet, so hold your horses already.
Who aspires to freedom cannot be measured. From Il Rovesio, an Italian site subtitled something like Chronicles on the State of Emergency. A response from some Italian anarchists to the continuing Scripta Manent trial and a series of measures limiting their movements. Quote, they want to divide us between good and bad, between an anarchism they call acceptable and one they call criminal. We are aware that it is our ideas that have been put on the stand in the latest inquiries, all the more so when these ideas find the way of being translated into action, because as we've always believed, thought and action find their meaning only when tied together. And it's not surprising that a hierarchical system of power, such as the state, is trying to knock out its enemies by playing dirty and reviewing history, precisely when social anger is growing everywhere, unquote. Solidarity is proclaimed with those being investigated for a series of actions, and solidarity is a weapon, and an opportunity, I hear.
Okay, humans, what's the fucking point? From Eco Revolt blog, aka Julian Langer. This piece is his paper for the Anarchist Studies Network conference, presented on September 2nd. It's a reflection on Camus and coins the phrase eco-absurdism because Langer is all about coining labels until he finds one that sticks, since that worked out so well for primitivism. Anyway, per usual, Langer's writing is most interesting for the disparate fields he smashes together, and one does get the feeling that his heart is in the right place, even if too many people in his life have told him that he's a precious snowflake. Quote, we know the situation is pretty fucking dire. I use the F word quite intentionally there, not for shock value, but for emphasis. Environmentalists are often too concerned with being polite over being honest. The idea that the apocalypse is fine, but no one should be rude, is not one I can get behind, personally. So I will state again, with no offense intended, but just harsh honesty, the situation is pretty fucking dire, and we know it. Unquote. Included is a 20-minute recording of the talk in case you're into the whole British accent thing.
The Victoria Anarchist Book Fair is happening online this week from victoriaanarchistbookfair.ca. So this is Friday, so it's over. There haven't been any reports about how any of this happening went, but the idea was to have, quote, direct action groups, musicians, academics, and land defenders to knowledge keepers, podcasters, radio hosts, and writers. Themes of this abundant accumulation range from indigenous-led resistance, exposing anti-statism, Black Lives Matter, anarcho-feminism, journalism, Kurdish anarchism, gender theory, history, and more, unquote. The first page of events includes Anne Hansen and Naptali talking about prison, a talk about Rojava Today, an indigenous warrior matriarch mother doula, medicine woman co-founder Zine writing advisor, and John Zerzan on his life and today's USA. I'm afraid.
Attacks on the 100th Night from PugetSoundAnarchists.org. A communique. Some Whole Foods and a Starbucks were smashed and tagged, apparently, though this write-up is short on specifics. Quote, capitalism feeds the police state. The police developed out of slave patrols. Slavery is the backbone of capitalism. We smashed Whole Foods because we are against capitalism in all its forms, and because we want you all to know that autonomous actions are not only possible, but they are happening, and they are an integral part of how we remain uncontrollable. As the police response to the demonstrations becomes more organized and more brutal, autonomous actions become ever more important. Sometimes it feels like we cannot act unless there are 100, 200 people. Don't underestimate your own abilities. It takes only one person to act, two to make an affinity group, three or four to get the job done faster, unquote. Confusingly signed, unless the comma was misplaced and these anarchists are against property love, which is possible, I guess. Oh, we probably know what they mean.
Not a defense from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, on the 11th of September, a maxi trial will begin in Lecce against almost 100 demonstrators accused of having opposed the realization of the TAP gas pipeline in various ways. A sort of spectacular event with big numbers set up mainly to impress and leave a sign of repression that can also be a warning to others in some way, besides the place, a bunker courtroom, chosen for the trial, officially for reasons linked to anti-COVID regulations, unofficially to create an atmosphere suitable for the criminalization of the TAP opposition. The obstinate and law-dependent clerks of order and the economy do not have much in their hands. In fact, we have nothing to defend. Unquote. Most of this is an acknowledgement of the changes happening in Italy at the moment, one of the areas hardest economically hit by COVID, and how that hardship will mean increasing depredations on the environment by rapacious corporations. It ends with, quote, "Your law serves to guarantee exploitation and privilege. Breaking it is the least that can be done." Unquote. Absolutely.
Critique of Appalachian Anarchism from C4SS by Eric Fleischman. Well, this session of the back and forth inside C4SS about Dakota Hensley's provocation that Appalachians have anarchist tendencies is the most serious and reasoned ones, and seems a little like bringing the Oxford English Dictionary to a poetry slam. Fleischman brings up solid points, references multiple sources of various perspectives, and exhibits knowledge about the area in a piece of writing that is quite reasonable and even-handed. Hensley's writing, on the other hand, has the charm of provocation. When we're brainstorming, we don't need reasonable people saying that won't work because of X, Y, and Z. What am I saying here? Both pieces are useful for completely different things. Imagination and logic, each in their place.
Refugee Camp of Moria Burns from CrimeThink. A report back from Greece where things are not looking good, and there seems to be a slide towards fascism again. It's unclear what or who started the fire that burned down one of the most notorious refugee camps in the world at the moment, but what is known is that there are now roughly 13,000 more homeless and hungry refugees. This article has multiple video clips of protests and camp walkthroughs, etc., and many links to help with services for folks in Greece. There is also information on continuing squad evictions, sexual assaults and murders, prison and repression, actions, exarchia, and public space, and much more. Exhaustive information on various sectors of Greek society and economics.
The Witch in the Smoke from JustSeeds.org by Roger Pete. This is a long and thoughtful blog post, meandering, with references to David Graeber, the Portland protests, and most especially James Carr, who is under-recognized as a meaningful to anarchists contemporary of the Black Panthers. Quote, "The key to what Carr says in his searing autobiography, and something that is horrifying to read but essential to the understanding of what he's describing, is that he freely acknowledges his participation in the most venal and heinous acts of prison culture, rape, beatings, other violence, and that he incorporates those experiences directly into his vision of how justice should be pursued. This is an alternate vision of illegalism, a dark and communal illegalism, allowing the transgression of norms and laws to flow through you and provide to you the perspective necessary to construct a liberatory ideology, where you have truly seen where not to go, by virtue of who you have been and how you have tried to live and transform your life," unquote. This reminds me of a quote from Bolterine to Claire, actually. Some long-winded anon was the first to comment on this post, and I think it didn't do the article justice, though plenty of folks would have had a hard time just with how long the article is. Whatever. I think it deserved more and better attention, and more people should read Carr's autobiography, Bad, which is the best thing that Isaac Cronin ever worked on.
Raids in Athens and Berlin, from Indie Media Germany, translated by Enough is Enough. Quote, "Berlin, Athens, September 16, 2020. The searches today, which included our anarchist library, are nothing new. But this time the authorities are stepping up their efforts. Five people are affected, who are accused of having founded a special, conspiratorial and criminal association, or being members of it. Berlin is not the only city currently affected by repression. We belong to the continuing trend of investigations against radical leftist structures in the FRG. Whether Hamburg, Frankfurt, or Leipzig, only our solidarity can be stronger than their repression," unquote. Includes a call for a solidarity protest and a promise of more information as it becomes available.
90th mobile phone mast goes up in flames, from Act for Freedom Now, a communique. Quote, "At around 4 a.m. during the night of Thursday, September 10th, in Otley Road, Bradford, in West Yorkshire, a pylon topped with a 5G antenna was set on fire. The fire lit at the foot of the pylon rose right to the summit, destroying everything along the way." Unquote. Officially, at least 90 mobile phone antenna have been sabotaged just in the UK since April. Imagine the possibilities.
Audio and Video, the intertwined histories of queerness and anarchism, an hour and 16 minutes from the Final Star Radio. This is really a powerhouse episode, and I suggest you listen. It starts out with a piece from Sean Swain, in which he reflects on the recent loss of his father, the enforced meaninglessness and struggles society imposes on our lives and deaths, and why he hopes for its destruction. Maybe someone could type that up and turn it into a zine. Next is another in Christian Williams's recent conversations around their new book, Resist Everything Except Temptation, the anarchist philosophy of Oscar Wilde. Most of what's covered is similar to Christian's recent interviews that have made their way to A-News, with a few notable exceptions thanks to a better-than-usual interviewer. Among the more interesting tidbits are Wilde's view of what post-capitalist production might look like, the cross-class culture of Wilde's loves and friendships, as well as some seeds of queer-slash-gay liberation being sown in reactions to his incarceration. I haven't read the book yet, but I am definitely pro-mining for anarchist ideas in any and all directions.
Gas Masks and Goggles, an hour and 20 minutes from How to Live Like the World is Dying. Before coronavirus, the wildfires raging on the West Coast, and hurricane season, Margaret Kildrew's podcast on anarchist prepping didn't seem quite as timely as it does today. Now, after a lengthy break due to said pandemic, Kildrew is back and getting even further into the nitty-gritty practical side of anarchists preparing for bad things. I want to mention that I think it is extremely important for anarchists to realistically plan for bad things, whether that be a natural disaster, an injury, or agents of the state knocking at your door. That being said, listening to an hour-long conversation that is just someone going on about the specs of various goggles and gas masks is, not super compelling to me. Margaret's charming personality and enthusiasm do a bit of work in terms of this not being just a list of mask makes and models, but that only goes so far.
Dissident Island Radio, episode 50, an hour and 9 minutes from Dissident Island Radio. About itself, Dissident Island Radio says, quote, Dissident Island Radio is a radical internet radio show broadcasting on the first and third Friday of every month from the London Action Resource Center. Our shows cover a wide range of topics from climate justice to animal rights to anti-fascism to squatting to economic justice and beyond, unquote. Did you spot the word anarchy in there? I didn't think so. The first quarter of this episode is an interview with a member of the Kent Refugee Action Network, which is, quote, an independent charity that provides help and support to asylum seekers and refugees, unquote. Again, no anarchy involved, just a discussion about the challenges refugees face in terms of education and a quick mention of an award-winning actress making a video for their website. Apart from the DJ portion of the show, which I didn't listen to, the rest of this episode is a discussion with the author of Authentic Democracy, an Ethical Justification of Anarchism.
No.
Which isn't as terrible as that title might lead you to believe, but definitely wasn't good. There is a funny part where the author mentions an anarchist society having enough technology to create smartphones so everyone can vote on things, though. So that was funny.
Immediatism episodes 128, 129, 130, and 131, Nietzsche and Anarchy, 28, 27, 35, and 35 minutes, respectively. These are indeed four selections from the Ardent Press Little Black Cart book, Nietzsche and Anarchy. Through an exploration of Nietzsche's philosophy, the book, or at least these sections, engages in something I support unreservedly, namely cracking open the ideas of a philosophical big man, taking whatever it is we can use, and leaving his body to rot. Topics covered in these sections are living a projectual life, moving from passivity to activity, propaganda, Nietzsche the man's relationship to actual anarchists, and much, much more.
Once upon Lord, you know we love you, Nietzsche. And all of your friends have come to see Nietzsche. So let us see Nietzsche. Everyone's waiting, Nietzsche. Don't be so sneaky.
Topic of the week. Are statues statist? Are statues statist? Can they be useful to anarchists? The statue is an old device, likely as old as society. From folklore artifacts to fallen heroes to deities, they'll always be carrying their load of meaning that brings a narrative of sorts, and they are pervasive and prevailing through time and context, and across distinct social arrangements. Erected on the public place, they went beyond their archaic role in deity worship to commemorating long past events and deeds across generations in a mythological social pattern that asserts the ideas they represent across and against time, 24/7, without anyone's direct effort at proselytism. Statues are preaching or storytelling by themselves. They can talk and act in a given social theater play. Even as most people aren't listening to their murmurs, even caring about it, they're still standing around, behind, beneath, and above all, beyond their lives. Especially with the advent of absolutism and then the modern times, statues just keep multiplying, and a colonialistic world where urban development is little more than a facade for the narrative world it destroyed. Native world it destroyed. The statues and other landmarks act merely as a feedback loop or self-justification of the settlers' own presence. So it can be argued that statues always have been at the very least accessories for myth-building. Even for the few instances they did not initially serve that purpose, they're just a step away from a myth to take shape around them. With the neo-Confederate movement erecting monuments to past racist murdering scum, and with their taking down by anti-racists, we could contemplate their unavoidable social purpose as signifiers of our place in history and in the world as a major marker in a battle for a dominant narrative. In a way, while it may feel insane to be attacking lifeless statues, it appears equally as necessary a cure for the insanity of an opposite faction enforcing their own views upon the rest of the world. As these statues were also given an eternal life of domination, in so, such defacing or taking down statues becomes an inherently anarchistic course of action. So to anarchists, the statue might seem, perhaps rightfully, like an absolute no-go. It is, after all, an ages-old practice of materializing authoritarianism, cultism, sheepish behaviors we despise and would rather reject. It's been a component in the cult of carrion, the worship of glorified images of dead people, of their myth, and as such, they bring us back to an anarchic pattern of sock putting with the dead and give them a central place in the world of today as it would not have evolved in a same old magic ritual aimed at resurrecting the past to lock us into it. If the world of humans, their society, is only driven by narratives, then shouldn't we as anarchists also be pushing for our own figures to become immortalized? Well, not necessarily in statues on the public place, but some means to make anarchist fighters, thinkers, creators, artists, poets, musicians, or even just randos be immortalized for what they did or experienced. It is obvious that we've been already doing that in a way, even if unconsciously. Why else dedicating / claiming attacks in the name of some fallen fighters the only conceivable way? Why else putting stuff on the internet if not for the people abroad and the generations to come to be inspired by those same symbols? If we'll avoid statues, then what will be the other ways? How do you think anarchists, to you, should symbolize their dead and sentiment beyond time and across generations in such nonverbal and passive means as a serious antagonist to the state's persistence through time? Just anarchy signs everywhere? Really? Thanks so much to Fauve Noir for sharing via email. Our address is thecollective@anarchistnews.org. Greetings, Anarchy Land. Welcome to a new installment of the topic of the week. This is a big one. I have with me today Wednesday. Hi, Wednesday.
Hello.
Thanks for sitting down and chatting with me. You seem like you're biting a little bit, like you have feelings. So I'm going to let you jump into the fray. What are your initial thoughts from the topic?
It's definitely an interesting question that I feel like I had to like kind of go into and be like, what do I think about statues?
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Like, and kind of like really tried to like understand more like the public opinion and the current events and historically. And I was like, where should I start with, like, Rodin? Like, where am I, like, going back to the old, like, sculptors? Like, who am, you know, like, how? But I think that this question kind of attacked it from even more of a base philosophical mm-hmm. perspective than I was, anticipating.
Well, actually, I have a question for you. So you're an artist.
Yes.
Do you think that a particular group of people, a section of society, a class, can own an art form? Because somewhere in here, I feel is... I feel like that's part of the argument that Fauvenoir is making.
You know that Picasso actually said that all of his paintings were communist paintings.
No, I didn't know that.
And that's a true fact. Because he was a communist, and he believed that everything that he made as a communist was communist.
And like, was of the communists and belonged to the communist people
or
something.
Yeah, totally. So...
Interesting.
I think it's interesting right now that in the world that the Chinese Communist Party, for example, is destroying Buddhist statues to keep their whole agenda intact, and even asking like churches to remove their crosses and to use more Chinese style architecture. And then, of course, like interning Muslim people, which is a whole nother thing on the next level, of course. But I think that, like, it's interesting that because they can be used as a state propaganda machine, that also, like, the destruction of certain statues is very statist and erasing other people who don't have state power. So
yeah, so it's interesting. So regardless of whether or not you want to argue whether or not a group of people can own an art form, this is an example of the government of China trying to own the art form, the Communist Party saying everything is going to be us, like Picasso on some level.
And I think like also like as like anarchism is the hardest one, like Dadaists, I think, are what people most want to prescribe as like an art form that would be anarchistic, even though it was a gamut of actual people. And like surrealism, I think, is maybe the close second that also had several anarchists, but a lot of like communist identified people. And I think Dali was even like fascist aligned. Like, and then of course you have the famous like Nazi degenerate art show that showed all this art that they considered to be degenerative. And so, yeah, I think that, but anarchism, I feel like is so anti-ideological that's why Dada is the best that encapsulates it. Cause the only rules of Dada are to break all the rules.
Oh, okay.
And,
So I was thinking about just statues in general, because my first response to, you know, let's say the first two paragraphs in the title was that this is ridiculous. That, you know, regardless of who puts it up or the purpose, that conceptually all statues can't be statist tools. But then I started to think about it, and I'm from a capital city.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived not very far from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And my earliest statue memories are a big ass statue of Christopher Columbus,
because
the city's named Columbus.
Yeah.
And a statue of a general on a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure mostly because I remember the horse, because I don't remember who the general is.
Yeah.
And it was definitely not until I was in high school that I have a memory of laying eyes on a statue that wasn't of a long dead white man who was either a politician or a war leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember who it was now. I remember that it was a woman, and it had something to do with slave runs, freeing slaves, and the Underground Railroad, the part of it that passed through Ohio on the way to Canada. And being, you know, I always had a particular soft spot for all the stories of slaves running for their freedom, and thinking that it was super cool that somebody had bothered to erect this statue that was different. I certainly didn't have any expectation that I would find anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think about, like, the, you know, the big, the landmarks that
that dot our country and shape us culturally. And you know, like everything in Washington, D.C., Mount Rushmore, and even all like the big statues that you can think of from all over the world. Like you said, this picture here on the topic of the week page is a statue from India. Do you know who that is?
You know, I literally
or even
just
generally, if you know who
he's like, he is. I can't, I don't want to say because I'm not.
And then there's that huge, massive picture of a statue of either a saint or God or Jesus in, is it Brazil?
I think it's Jesus, yeah.
That's like the size of a skyscraper that just looms over the entire city. And so all of these really big things do come from the statists.
Well, but are you aware of... who is it? The statue of Crazy Horse in the Black Hills that, what was his name?
Is this the one that they were putting up near Mount Rushmore?
That's 17 miles from Mount Rushmore. And
yeah.
Henry Standing Bull, one of the Lakota elders, commissioned. And if completed, would actually be the second largest statue in the world after the one in India.
So I went to visit Mount Rushmore years ago. I took my grandparents, and they were working on constructing that. And it was definitely really clear that was a kind of a 90s response to the mountain with the white men's faces on it.
Yeah.
Not to say that it's not a statue that should happen. And they had a little like a small mock-up, like table-sized mock-up of it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's amazing. But again, I feel like these are not the things that inherently happen around us. So,
but like,
I mean, on some level, I guess the more that I thought about it, the more I felt like, you know, maybe there is an argument to be made that for better or for worse, throughout so much of history, erecting a statue in a public place is an act of statism and colonialism. So I started out not agreeing, but now I think I do agree. And so... is this another one of those things that we're going to break down between like capitalist statues, lowercase statues? Because obviously lots of artists engage in lots of statues and, yeah, I have a hard time like seeding the whole ground of the medium.
Well, I guess like
to the statists and the colonialists,
like I'm not going to at all argue that historically and contextually that statues are a big force in this propaganda machine and the control of imagery and history in the public space. I think that I'm like from a more pragmatic perspective, like that when you live in an urban environment and you just exist in a sea of plastic strip mall signage and nothing and like postmodern architecture, that like for me when I see a plaque, like I'll spot it across the street and run through avoiding traffic to be like, what does it say? Oh my god, this was built like not 80 years ago to be a laundry factory. Like, that's incredible. Oh my god. And like, because otherwise it's a like freaking 24-hour fitness that was built, like, whoever,
so
you know
true.
and just to have any connection to the history at all, like in a way that I wouldn't have thought about myself to even work, like even if I see a fucked up white guy on the statue and like it makes me go and look up this thing that happened and be like, that happened in this place, like this crazy battle where like the white man won, like I want to know about what happened there. And I'll like, and because I think that to like take any statue and whatever 10 words are on the plaque at face value literally is like you're a fool anyways. And I think that just to be stimulated about history and the role that it's played and how we've gotten here is probably a better start in breaking free from the patterns that have brought us here in the first place than to completely invisibilize it and want to not be attached to that. And I know people who are like the most anti-fascist fucking fuck Nazis forever type people who would rather not erase the swastika that someone drew on a wall because it shows that there's fucked up Nazis around here. Good to know, duly noted, because I think the more important engagements are the face-to-face and how we engage with people around us and what might indicate those or inform those interactions. Mm-hmm. So the statues and the stuff in the back is all the periphery. It's mm-hmm. the background. It's not where anarchism really has has its traction. So
I have two thoughts. I read an interview with a poet whose name I'm not going to remember, and he positioned himself and posited that we shouldn't tear the statues down. We should tell the truth about them. So whatever plaque there is, mm-hmm. leave that, leave the statue. And then next to that plaque, put up, a page. This is who he was. And he was a rapist and he was a murderer. And these are the people whose lives he's responsible for. And this is the land that he took and who he took it from and tell the truth.
Or even build a bigger, cooler statue next to him of the people that rose above. And
yeah. So I thought that was an interesting idea. And it also makes me think in kind of the height of statues being torn down and the municipalities starting to take statues down because of the liability and risk of injury of people trying to pull them down themselves. I read an article that was an artist talking to and then sharing the conversation with. They'd had some of their other artist friends who, while they absolutely believed that the statues should come down, were basically advocating to not destroy them because this was someone's work. And that someone was they were just a sculptor, a body of people, a commission, the state came to them and said, can you make us a statue of this person? And that artist did that work with, passion and in good faith. And there's something that's, disrespecting the work and of that individual person. If you just destroy it, which I'm not sure if I agree with, but I thought was an interesting position to take.
Yeah. I think I'm even as an artist myself, and I would definitely be furious if someone came into my room and destroyed my art that I had in there. But also as someone who, I think I would strongly advocate for graffiti and street art, even though street art feels somewhat of a pejorative, even if we're going to look at it from a more extreme perspective, just mm-hmm. because street art kind of feels it implies a level of gentrifiable.
Sure.
Aspects that don't necessarily have to be, and they could be provocative or subversive, but most often Banksy, for example, are just mean money now. And
yeah.
And I'd move in with a Banksy on the outside. I've got all the money type, people.
Sure, absolutely.
Or beautifying places that would otherwise not be beautiful because the murals make it look like it's nicer living conditions than it would be.
Sure.
But so I think graffiti in that sense, that's just straight up graffiti and people doing writing words that no one else can read even, and or has an appreciation of, and that landlords and realtors definitely dislike, I think has more of a, if there were to be a more anarchistic art, grounded in the premise of it having to be an exists as an opposition, which also I'm not, don't really necessarily believe to its so much, but I think that I do appreciate graffiti for that quality, that it exists as its own, and it's not even often concerned with being in opposition as much as it just exists as one, and that's like just part of it and what it is. So
okay, let's look at the question here, because Fauvenoir asks lots of questions. So if we accept the premise that statues are statist and we're going to avoid them, Fauvenoir asks, shouldn't we as anarchists also be pushing for our own figures to become immortalized? Fighters, thinkers, creators, artists, poets, musicians, shouldn't they be immortalized for what they did or experienced?
I'll answer that without necessarily accepting the premise, just because I want.
Fine.
Just because I want, I wanted to mention a statue that I had found with someone in Prague, in the Czech Republic, and we're like just randomly wandering through the city, and we're like, wow, this statue is so bizarre and weird. Like, what? Who is this guy? And we looked him up, and we were surprised that he was an anarchist. Like, it was like so-and-so author and anarchist. Huh. And we're like, wow, look, that's so cool. It was I'm going to botch his name, Jaroslav Hasek. Okay. And he wrote The Good Soldier Schweck.
Okay.
And he served in the Austro-Hungarian army in World War I. And this book apparently is the most translated novel in all of Czech fiction, and it satirizes authority and war, and basically this soldier is serves in the military, and just no one can tell if he's an imbecile or if he's mocking things, just because he's so fully yes sir, what do I do? Yes, I'll anything, front lines, you've got it, I can't wait. And he just pushes it to its extreme, and people, but then he gets in trouble because the authority figures think he's mocking them, and he's like, no, like I'm an imbecile, what do you mean, like you've already and so it's kind of excellent. But yeah, I think just things like that I'd never ever would have heard of this guy or this work even if I hadn't stumbled upon it. And I also think about the Lewis Carroll, the Alice in Wonderland sculptures in Central Park that inspire kids to want to read and or if at least have enjoy themselves. And I think that
in which the Mad Hatter is a little creepy, by the way.
Well, we have already known that the Mad Hatter is a little creepy.
He's actually creepy.
And Lewis Carroll himself. So, but that's why I think his, just having, representing his work, his fiction, and not, having things that are more of an abstract or playful interpretive sculptures instead of maybe a statue that the question here, has an absolutism to it. You can be provocative and stimulate people without needing to dictate the past or something like that.
I have had this vision, I guess this dream for a long time of living somewhere or being part of a project that was in a building, and that somehow I would be able to have stained glass windows.
Mm.
Stained glass windows. And they would all depict images of anarchists, but keeping with the theme in the very, saint-like
mm-hmm.
Ways that people are represented in stained glass.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Emma and Lucy and Kropotkin and Berkman and, but, you know, all in, like, you know, sanded out and,
and
you know, the masses rabbling. And I really liked the idea of the juxtaposition of those two things.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it means that my answer to the question is yes, anarchists should be immortalized. And I think how matters less. And I kind of like the idea of an anarchist figure put up, you know, on a vaulted marble plinth and it mm-hmm. looking like this, you know, classic, important figure who's, you know, a great orator or a politician or a war hero. But it's just some silly anarchist who wrote a piece of fiction.
Well,
and so, you know, kind of dissing your expectations as to who's going to be represented. I think that there's like, it feels pretty situationist to me. And it like that in itself mm-hmm. actually seems pretty anarchist to me. Say, we're going to take the form, but we're going to screw with your expectations of the form and uh-huh. present back to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, I feel like my current capacity to display public art is limited to like two-dimensional surfaces and like, or like if I'm really like pushing whatever I want to be pushed, like it is like wheat paste and such. But I also think that like the idea of like, I think that that's what's more statist or recuperative about statues is that it's so limited to a particular trade or tradespeople that like have the capacity to produce things like a bronze statue. I
there's a lot of resources involved in the process.
Resources and a lot of money. And I think that ultimately, like, I think it would be badass if there was like an anarchist collective of bronze sculptors that was all like DIY, like where, oh yeah, we can make a sculpture better than anyone on the main boulevard can. And ours is about whatever we want and push that to, and like, and find ways to do that sustainably and in like, and with from a more, yeah, without like letting, I think the fact that the state has control over that because they can start the committees and raise the funds. That's also, I think that Standing Bull or Standing Bears, like he was actually, or they were like, offered tens of millions of dollars at two different or like $10 million at two different times by the US government. And they insisted on raising the funds privately because they didn't want the government to ultimately have control over the cultural center and the museum and the whole educational aspect that like is the whole like kind of the draw of having a, the crazy horse statue in the first place to like draw people in and basically what like Standing Bear's older brother who had came up with the idea while they were constructing Mount Rushmore called the people or spoke to the people in charge of Mount Rushmore and basically said like that like, oh, like Crazy Horse is the true patriot of the Lakota. Like he would be the only one good enough to be on that mountain next to Lincoln and Washington, and basically never got a response. And that's why they were like, okay, like we'll do it ourselves. And they were able to procure that land 17 miles down the way. But I mean, like, Crazy Horse, it was like, his thing was that he took up arms against the federal government mm-hmm. and then he was killed in allegedly trying to escape from captivity in prison by like US marshals. So like, and that's like, I think a pretty like, and especially just like, just imagine like people like, okay, we're going to do the Mount Rushmore trip after Disneyland. And then, like, there's no way you can go and check out Mount Rushmore and then look at the pamphlet that says, like world's second largest statue 17 miles away. Like, you already came out all the way here. Like, for you're sure. going to go check out the crazy horse statue. Yeah. Like, it's, and like, I don't know. I think also just as a street artist, like, I think embracing the impermanence of public art and embracing the fact that someone might, some right-wing asshole might very well or likely will rip it off the wall if they see something that is like against their ideology. So I think there's the sculptures out in the Emeryville mudflats with the Red Baron and stuff, like in the water, and they were kind of placed on these posts out in the water and without permission, and have kind of become an Emeryville landmark. But apparently the guy, when he was building those, like pretty virtually almost every time, like the next day it would be still gone or stolen, or the weather would tear it down and destroy them completely. But he spent just like so much time. His name was Tyler James Horse. He just spent like an insane amount of time constructing these awesome sculptures and getting a crew out in some boats at night and having someone on the dock with a falsified letter from the city saying they had gotten permission to be doing this. And if you, so like, it's not impossible to create things that are enjoyed and experienced by the public as an audience without buying into the notion that the government has to like oversee it or even approve it.
Yeah. I didn't know about the Emeryville statues. That's awesome.
Totally.
Okay. Well, thank you. Do you have any last thoughts before we sign off? Anything in particular you want to address in the questions? I kind of skirted over some of them.
I've got plenty of thoughts and things to say, but I'll leave that to other people.
Okay, we'll do it next time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Wednesday.
Of course.
Thank you, Anarchy Land, for tuning in.
Thanks to Fava Noir.
Thank you. Yeah, very much, Fava Noir, for the very thoughtful question topic. Yeah, that was really great. Yeah, be safe and stay angry and take care of yourselves. Until next week. Bye. The statue got me high. The statue got me high. The monument of granite center beam into my eye. The statue made me die. The statue made me. This week's podcast was sound edited by me, who is Greg, who is me. The What's New was written and read by Chisel and Greg, who is also me and also not me. And we thank Ariel and a friend for their help with the topic of the week, which is statues.
To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-minute commentary. See you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on eNews. Yeah.